My spoon is too big. My spoon is too big. My spoon is too big. I am a banana.
Welcome to the Port Forward Podcast.
What's up, guys? This is Port Forward Podcast number 16. We are here at NoSQL Camp live. This is the first live recording we've ever done together.
It's pretty awesome. I'm excited.
It's bound to happen.
We have a whole fucking pile of food here. Merrick just ran into the other room and just grabbed basically 3x the amount of food we could all eat.
I wanted to not run out. It's tragic when you're at a conference and you run out. I was a little bit traumatized by the shortage of pizza from TwilioCon, so that's why I just raided the snack room, or whatever you want to call it.
So we're chilling here, and we just finished up with the NoSQL database conference. We talked a little bit about NoSQL last week, but we wanted to give you guys sort of an update on what this conference was about. Last week, we specifically talked about the Redis database. Also here was someone promoting the MongoDB, as well as Cassandra. One of the benefits that Mongo has over Redis is that you can have multiple nodes, and I believe it's also allowed to be larger than memory. As for Cassandra, I actually don't know much about it. Merrick, you were taking some pretty good notes there.
Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't about Cassandra. I was just writing shit down to make it look like I was smart. I was actually even writing stuff down about NoSQL.
Because it worked.
Just kidding. There was even a third or fourth, or I wasn't counting, provider that had a sticker I got, which is DataStax. They might actually be a sponsor for the event, so don't take me on that actually being a NoSQL provider. I just have that sticker, and I think it's cool.
So Cassandra supposedly is used for Dig, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, Rackspace, CloudKick, etc.
That's a decent list.
And apparently it has fault tolerancy. The problem is I went onto Google and I searched for Try Cassandra, and I figured that would mean, you know, we had the Try Redis link, which we shared with you guys last week, and you guys have both tried that out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was cool. I liked
it. The little tutorial is, like, pretty slick.
It reminded me of the Ruby tutorial you showed me previously.
I don't, yeah, I'm trying to learn Ruby so bad, but I keep getting distracted with, like, Python and,
You're
like,
a busy guy. You got, like, fucking three different things going on that are more or less full-time things.
It's a problem.
Not to mention that ever so slow process of coming out of the closet. I mean, your close and personal friends have been helping you, but we can only do so much.
You know,
I'm just kidding.
Want to know how I know you're gay?
Ben is a heterosexual life partner of mine, and I give all my friends shit.
Oh, man. So one of the things that people talked a lot about at this conference was ACID.
And I've never even heard of that. What is that, dude?
So ACID stands for Atomicity, Consistency, Isolation, and Durability. Is a set of properties that guarantee database transactions are processed reliably. In the context of databases, a single local operation on data is called a transaction. For example, a transfer of funds from one bank to another, even though that might involve multiple changes, such as debiting one account and creating another. This is a single transaction. So I just read that off of Wikipedia, but basically what it means is the ability to make transactions. So if you have multiple nodes or multiple CPUs that basically are hosting your same database, you want the ability to have one transaction be the same on all these different CPUs. So without ACID, what you would have is if you had a read, modify, write operation, specifically if you had two separate CPUs that were both going to read some data, modify it, and then write it back to the database. Mm-hmm. Well, if they both made that read at the same time and then modified it to different values, then you would have inconsistent, you would lose data. What you would want is you'd want the first, whoever got there first, to do the read, write, and modify and kind of lock that record until the second guy came in and then he did the read. And by the time the second guy came in, the first guy's operations would have already been completed so that his read would be correct at that point. So ACID is this big deal in databases because when you have ACID set up correctly, you don't like lose data due to multiple CPUs kind of writing the same thing.
Gotcha.
They have a really good implementation of that with Dropbox. If you have two, let's say Merrick has a text file open, I have a text file open, we both hit the save, and they're both totally different. The person who hit save second will have a conflicted copy. It'll say sam.txt or sam's conflicted copy.txt in brackets.
So it like makes a new file name?
Mm-hmm. Called conflicted copy of the separate data.
I've never seen that. Have you tried that out in person?
Yeah, I have a lot of cases with different people, active law cases.
Right.
And so invariably I open up a case map document, which is just it's just basically a database, like an Excel thing. And then someone else will open it, and I tell them not to, and you know, I'm like, you know, I'm going to open it between these different times. And invariably, it ends up with a conflicted copy. So it works very well, because then I can see the conflicted copy there, and I look at the changes, and I just implement the changes myself. But if I wasn't there, it would probably be a problem. Because then we just end up with like conflicted copy 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I've actually seen that also. I use KeePass, a password management utility that I find infinitely useful. Because in this day and age, you know you're not supposed to use the same password over and over across web services. And you're supposed to use complex passwords. And I can't remember any of that shit. So this program, KeePass, it's spelled K-E-E-P-A-S-S. I use it as a password manager. And I have one relatively strong password that I have to remember.
It's like the master password, which then unlocks all the rest of
them,
right?
Yeah, unlocks them all, and then there's keyboard shortcuts to copy username, password, open website, stuff like that, so you can, you know, get fast at it and use it. It's pretty handy.
You know, I've never used one of those, but isn't that just a single point of failure then for everything?
It is, but the point is you make that link in the chain so epic strong that, you know.
Like, I have a 20-plus digit password with numbers uppercase.
I've seen him type it in. He's like, he goes to town on the keyboard. He's like gently massaging the keyboard.
If I were dealing with more important stuff, it might be a problem, but for my level of whatever you want to call it, it's not that big a deal. But back to the story, I have had my KeePass database open on a laptop and a desktop at the same time, and I have made different changes, and then I hit save on one and the other, and I have witnessed that same thing in Dropbox. And again, props to Dropbox for coming up with a user-friendly system for that, because you know, obviously what Ben just told you about is a complex issue in databases, and you know, that's a real life issue, especially when you have large data sets spread across, you know, databases,
right,
servers,
multiple nodes,
different
right.
parts of networks and different parts of the world.
So another one of the things I just remembered was CouchDB. Now CouchDB, what the fuck, all the lights in the room in this little conference room we just turned off,
please stand by some technical
please stand by while Merrick fix the fucking lights. Barrick says keep talking. So we have the CouchDB project, and it's apparently the Apache CouchDB project. But CouchDB was really unique because the guy was saying they were using, was it in Africa? Was it like hospitals in Africa or something?
Yeah, that was very clever.
So basically it keeps an offline copy of all the data, and I wasn't quite sure on how exactly it worked, but it seemed that it was like the time of the transaction was saved. So basically, you know, if you want to make changes to your local offline copy, he said something like once the wind blows in the right direction, the cell network comes back up.
Yeah.
then you're able to like reconcile all your changes.
Yeah, it sounded like it basically did a Dropbox sync whenever.
Right. But the whole point of the database was that it was supposed to be consistent the whole time. So as you made modifications offline, once you went back online, those modifications were applied to the records.
Yeah, you got to kind of wonder how that's sorted out when conflicts arise. Like, obviously, conceptually, that seems like an awesome, you know, way to handle stuff. But obviously, if two people modify the same record file, what have you, there's going to be an issue there. So I'm sure there's a system such that, you know, whether the first person wins or second person gets notified, whatever.
But I would assume that you would be just be doing modifies. Like if you only did add or subtract as opposed to like set to this value. Like if you said, you know, like how much money do you have in your account? And all I'm doing is adding and subtracting. It wouldn't matter if the transactions were applied in the future
or
in the past.
For integer math, yeah. But
for integer stuff, right, exactly. For strings, I guess, that's a good point. Yeah. Like, you know.
Obviously, I'm sure they have something going on there, but either way, it was a cool presentation, and the fact that they had this implemented and it was helping these doctors out in rural Africa is kind of mind-blowing, because you assume rural Africa is, you know, spotty network internet.
At best.
Any, like, seriously, like, I, you know, don't go there and try to Skype.
So I'm still trying to get a try CouchDB, and I still have nothing. The try Redis is such an amazing...
Yeah, that's obviously, you know, if you're going to provide a product or a tool and you can have a super easy to use demo that people can get into and pass around and enjoy, then that's the way to go. Whereas if you're trying to be like, hey, use my service, and they're like, how? And they're like, well,
how do I use it?
API documentation buried
just
in our website
it
somewhere.
Out, okay.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, you gotta help people.
So, I mean, I haven't used CouchDB or Cassandra. I have used MongoLab and Redis, but I haven't used either of those. And I'm kind of looking to try and maybe get some app, like basically get some basic API calls into these NoSQL databases. So I might be able to do this sometime in the future when I'm just sticking around, when I have free time. Because I definitely like to share with you guys what sort of the cost benefits are and what are some of the cool features that these databases provide.
Definitely, yeah. And one other thing, I actually don't have any NoSQL experience yet, so you're the expert, Ben, on this. And one thing I'm curious about is, you know, I have some SQL experience. We'll call that limited. But when I'm querying, you know, an old-fashioned SQL query is you say, you know, I want all the last names of people, and whether you qualify it or not, you, how does querying work in a NoSQL database is my question, and how is that, you know, compared to an SQL database?
Well, I mean, usually when you're querying a NoSQL database, you already know what you want. I think that somehow NoSQL databases kind of limit what you can eventually do, which is sort of a downside. There's some things where SQL really does make sense. NoSQL is better when you know exactly what you're looking for. So, for instance, NoSQL is usually key value, meaning you've got one key and one value, which is different than SQL, where you've got all these different values and stuff like that. So NoSQL can be used very well when you have, for instance, people, like they log into your server, and after they've logged in, they need a session key. So they need their own session variable, and that session variable is going to be accessed a lot, like over and over, right? So... you know, basically the user provides a session variable, they hit the website, and your website is supposed to say, are they logged in? Does the session variable exist? So the browser will query exactly that session key, and if it exists or not, basically you return the username or you return some sort of data.
Piece of information
directly back.
Gotcha.
But it wouldn't be maybe as good for doing large selects or large queries or, you know, sort of data mining and stuff like that.
So I guess there's certain situations where a traditional SQL database would work better, depending on, you know, your data set and what you the queries you need to be making.
So yeah, usually if you have multiple columns these ways connected together, if you've got multiple columns connected together, let's say you have like 15 or 20 columns, mm-hmm. you know, one record that has these 15 different things associated with it might be better to do a SQL.
Yeah.
But if you have more of a simple one-to-one relationship, then NoSQL can be a little bit better for you.
Yeah, and in addition, database design is a very large topic and very complex. Even though it seems simple at front, if you are going to be building something that's going to be holding a lot of information, you should actually research it a little because it's more than meets the eye. Like a database always starts out simple, and then, you know, 16 tables later, you're like,
right.
Wait, what's going on?
What's
here?
Going on? How do I do it?
Remotely so slow. Get this data.
And one of the cool things about so we saw a presentation from IGN. There was a guy. I believe
I did take notes on them. So
I believe his hashtag was lobster1234.
I didn't write his hashtag down.
I tweeted him, and he tweeted me back twice, which I was quite impressed with.
Infinite Graph is the name of the
that was not the that was not the IGN guys. Those were doing
what?
Something else.
Infinite Graph.
IGN was a different one.
Oh, dude. Just kidding. We're talking about different things.
So the IGN guys, you know, IGN magazine's like a gamer. What's it stand for?
Oh.
Something gaming network.
Independent
gaming network.
Okay, so IGN. All right. And one of the things he said about his story, all the different stories that they write about, is that some of them have blog posts, some of them have, he said, podcasts attached, some of them have videos. So basically, the schema per post is very different. Mm-hmm. So it's not like every post has a podcast. With a traditional SQL model, you would need a podcast field for every single post, and you would leave it blank for all of them except for the ones that actually do have the podcast.
Or null value.
You would leave a null for except for all the ones that actually have the podcast. And he said that that allowed him to be very flexible. So because with NoSQL, you kind of make up the schema. When you first set the record, it creates the schema like in that instant, right? So it's pretty cool because basically they can just create the articles however they want. You know, this game has, you know, these attributes and this game has these attributes. It's kind of like a mixed match. They can kind of just make it work.
Gotcha. So do you remember if he was saying they used a specific solution or if he was just talking about NoSQL?
I think they were using Mongo.
Okay.
Although I don't remember correctly. Yeah. And he said they were using virtualized CentOS, which is like the knockoff of Red Hat. And so I raised my hand and I said, well, what kind of virtualization? And he said Zen Server, which made me very happy because someone fucking actually uses Zen Server besides me.
Well, the way you have it set up, it actually seems super useful. I have to assume other people are doing that same thing out there.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, the Red Hat guy, not the Red Hat, the VMware guys provide the same kind of thing. But I think that specifically Zen Server has more features on the free version.
Huh, cool. So you got to pay to play with the other one.
You got to pay to play with VMware, and apparently you have to pay to play per VM or it's like per VM or something like that. There's like they charge you this much money for these many VMs,
Were we talking to Neil about that?
We were talking about Neil about that, right? Whereas Zen Server just charges you per CPU or something like that.
They had to pay a bank to like increase their whatever. I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, both of those are just arbitrary models of
income.
It really makes no difference to them how many VMs you have or how many CPUs you have.
Obviously. But, you know, I guess that's why you ended up going with...
Well, we went with Zen Server because the price was the right. But, you know, at my work on it, to be honest, I don't know if I evaluated VMware as thoroughly as I could have.
Gotcha.
Which might, you know, it might have ended up that VMware was a better solution for us.
That's totally happened to me before. I'll be like, all right, well, this is free. I'm going to start out using this. And then, like, I'll be halfway into it. And I'll be like, oh, God, this is so much work.
Twilio?
I should have just paid for something.
Should have just gone with Twilio?
Well, in Twilio's case, I didn't know about them. So
okay, so fair enough.
They were under the radar for me, at least. That was the thing. I was shocked when I was looking for SMS providers.
Gateway?
Yeah, you call them the same thing. When I was looking for SMS gateway for TextMyQ, I started searching on the internet and I aggregated a list of like 10 providers. And Twilio never popped up. This was fall 10. So, you know, whatever you want to call that.
How much should they generally cost per text message?
Well,
is it by text?
It is by text, but even more shocking about the story is I have this list of 10 or 11 providers, and I start calling, and there's absolutely no customer service for, like, the first 6 or 7 of them. It's like they only catered to corporations or someone who's going to be dealing huge volume, which kind of was shocking to me, and this is like, duh, this is where Twilio came from and what Twilio is doing now, but... When I finally got a hold of one, you know, person, they're like, oh, we don't really work with, you know, small companies or, you know, we don't have a solution that's, you know, going to work for your product. And finally, I got a hold of a guy at AerialLink who was super friendly and said, oh, yeah, we can, you know, help you out, do this and that for you. And I was shocked after, you know, making 11, you know, at least 11 calls and a decent amount of internet research that I only found one person I could talk to who was friendly and had a product for me that fit for me.
Don't you hate
service.
That when you call someone and you say, I want to give you my money, and they won't even talk to you. They won't even communicate.
No, sorry,
we won't take your money.
We don't really want that.
I tried to ask like if they had any recommendations, and they were clueless too. It was kind of shocking. So AerialLink is an awesome provider. I'm still working with them, and Twilio is... Even though they've been around, they went through a recent explosion, and, you know, I don't know what catalyzed that, but, you know, obviously we covered TwilioCon on our last podcast, and they're, you know, to be watched because they're doing everything right that is to be done as far as publicity and, you know, the fact that they had a Twilio conference with a hackathon.
Exactly.
They're plugged into 500 startups, which is, I think, like a funding kind of, maybe even an incubator too, startup incubator, but they seem more funding-oriented. And Dave McClure, amongst others, is behind 500 startups. And I don't know what the selection process is, but it's a similar, from my limited knowledge, is a similar thing to Y Combinator. So that's, you know, something to research if you're looking to get funded.
Awesome.
Good news.
Mm-hmm. So are we thinking that's it or what?
Well, we should definitely add something to this podcast.
No, later. I think this is a good podcast. I think we should keep it short.
Really?
I think we should definitely introduce a female as the first female ever on this podcast. Come here. What did you think about the
How bored were you?
Well, first come close. What did you think about the how bored were you?
Not bored.
No, not bored?
Nope.
Did you understand what they were saying?
Sure.
By the way, having a female on anything, generally the subscribers go up like triple.
Right.
Just
you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. I'm Cherry. I'm Sam's wife.
Aw.
And so you'd possibly be open to maybe modeling for the Port Ford podcast?
Or maybe some bikini catalog or calendar?
That's actually the channel through which females are used more often. It's kind of like the front end. And like, you know, not to say there's not, you know, female podcasters out there who don't use their body, you know, to their advantage. But I would just imagine, you know, you go to a trade show, right, and you see promo girls that are like bouncing around behind the counter, and you're like, yeah, I know why you're there. You're just there so I walk over and talk to you, even though I'm not really listening to what you say. So, you know, that's unfortunately, you know, how I see girls in tech. And I know there are actual girls out there in technology that are, you know, doing the stuff we're doing, and I'm looking forward to meeting them, and that's why we're forcing here on the podcast right now.
Just because we had a female, just for that very last part. That's the only reason.
In our podcast. That's why we wanted you here.
And what was the food like, Cherry, here? What would you rate the food? Out of 1 to 5, or 5 is the best food you could ever order, and 0 is you went to your kitchen and put, what was it, salami on a cracker?
On bread.
On bread.
It's like 2.
Like a 2?
Yeah.
Like, but they had like a weird, like an egg, they had like an egg quiche thing.
Yeah.
Crustless quiche, and they had little sandwiches which were sliced in about 1 inch. It was like a really long sandwich sliced in little 1 inch things.
Smeared with sauce or something.
Yeah, sauce was all right. And they had like bottles of red wine, which was kind of a cheap red wine, but I, you know, we got sloshed, or I got sloshed on that.
Yeah, Jinka Urban was a... There's a certain blood alcohol content level where Ben turns into Jenga, and he was dangerously near that level. And considering we're not at a lake, and you know,
we're not on partying vacation, on the water or anything. Yeah, there's no water involved.
So thankfully, Ben was barely able to stay Ben, and he only had a few loud outbursts during the presentations. And you know, other than a few dirty looks, it went off without a hitch, which is good.
Particularly when they mentioned Bing. We're talking about
One guy was talking about Bing, and he said, you know, we index Bing.
He worked for Microsoft, right?
Yeah, we index Twitter feeds so that you can search tweets within 15 seconds. And so I raised my hand, and I said, does that mean if I tweet something, I can search it within 15 seconds? He said, well, I don't know. Why don't you try? And I was like, I'm trying, but it didn't work. I went to Bing,
I tried to search for my own tweet,
and it didn't come up.
He had a very impressive looking presentation, but what Ben just mentioned did actually happen. So you got to wonder what maybe that was the ideal.
The ideal was 15 seconds, but I got to wonder if I search for my tweet, how do I filter that out amongst all the other results that are going to come back? Right?
Maybe with a constraint,
tight search.
I don't use Bing, so I don't know.
And maybe I don't use Bing either.
Maybe if we have a Bing lover in the audience, or user, or a Microsoft person. Yeah, right.
Sherry, what's your favorite search engine?
Google.
Everybody's. It's everybody's.
What's your favorite browser?
Firefox.
Oh.
Well, I don't know. It's
well, Firefox is because of the ad block, you know, and you get sort of comfortable with Firefox and the ad block. It's not really the, you know, Firefox has really gone downhill since version 3.
This line of questioning is intriguing to me, and I just thought of a new one. If each one of you guys could only use one website for the rest of your life and never click a link off that website, what website would that be?
So just internal to it?
Yeah, internal to that.
4chan, right here.
You would totally get bored of that shit in like 2 weeks.
No, I wouldn't. The content is so new and original. The memes originate from 4chan, dude.
I know, but still.
Okay, what's your fucking answer then?
I don't have one. I just don't think
that's... Well, no, don't answer...
I don't think that's the right answer.
Don't answer the question. All right, Sam, what's your fucking answer?
It'd be a certain German site.
Yig.de.
I'm not even going to ask about that.
That's a Y-I-G-G.
I've been burned going to too many German sites, so...
Have you?
Two guys dot one cup dot du or Deutschland or whatever it is. I'm just kidding.
Don't Google that.
All right, Sherry, what's your favorite website that you could never leave?
I don't have one.
Would it be Yig?
You don't go. Where do you always go? Do you go to Yahoo News? You go to your Google News?
I don't read news.
Like that? What was that one guy?
You don't read news? SF Gate. Okay, SF Gate. All right.
Yeah.
Eric, what's your goddamn answer?
Wikipedia. I'd be Wikipedia.
Yeah. What a pompous answer.
I would start out with like purposeful research and make myself smarter, and then I would get so sick of it that I'd just keep clicking random articles.
All right, guys. Okay. Have you heard about the Wikipedia game?
No.
This is the best thing ever. So you go to any Wikipedia page, your favorite Wikipedia page, and this is how it works. You have to click the first link on the page. If there's any parentheses, you have to skip those parentheses. So if there's any links within those parentheses, you skip it. Okay. So you always click the first link, skipping parentheses. And the result is you will always end up on the single page of philosophy. You will always end up on philosophy. I swear it's true. You guys out there in podcast land, you have to try this. Go to any Wikipedia page, the most random Wikipedia. You know, you might as well go to the Wikipedia page.
Bats in Africa.
Bats in Africa, right. How about you try the Wikipedia page of figging? You guys look up that word figging and figure out what it means. I won't even tell you on the podcast because it's that bad. But try it. You see if you get to philosophy. You tell me.
You know how you see those search results sometimes for what's trending at Google or whatever? You know, what people are searching.
Right, there's that cool, yeah. Yeah,
so we totally just increased figging by like 100 listeners.
Yes.
Users, listeners, searchers just now. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Figging just went up to 100,
there's
yeah.
There's going to be a little blip in the chart. It's ridiculous.
Check it out, Wikipedia game, guys. It's legit. It really works.
And if Ben is full of crap, please email him. Let him know. He actually needs that kind of feedback. So.
Our email address is packets@portforwardpodcast.com. Once again. And you should follow us on Twitter, portfwdpodcast. We tried to put the whole Port Forward Podcast, but Twitter has a fucking character limit for usernames.
What's the reason for that anyway?
Well, I mean, originally, you know, their whole thing is limited to 140 characters. Uh-huh. So when you're tweeting on your cell phone, you only have 160 characters. So that would mean the username has to be less than 20, plus any extra, you know, I don't know what other commands. I've never used Twitter on the cell phone before. But, I mean, that's kind of how it originated, right? So,
I suppose so.
So it's 140 characters plus less than – your username has to be less than 20. So FWD – that's 12 characters, Port FWD Podcast. So, you know, that gives you 8 characters for some bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Good news.
Well, I'm trying to see if I didn't count right. I'm sure someone's going to say it's actually 13, but we'll figure it out.
No big deal. It's cool. So what did we say the food was here at
I would say it's like a 2 as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they had like a refrigerator stocked full of like Coke and Pepsi and wine.
There was not enough beer to go around.
There's only about 6 or 7 beers. And the refrigerator was not clear. I like a clear refrigerator where I can see the things before I open it.
Well, that's like a display fridge.
That's like a display fridge where you would see it like a, you know, a shop or something. This is like a home fridge, yeah.
The place we're in appears to be some subsidiary of Microsoft or some little...
Yeah, Microsoft is hosting this.
And it's actually a nice building, and there's nice little breakout rooms and conference rooms, and it's in a decent part of town. Are we in the financial still? Or?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Financial District San Francisco, so compliments to Microsoft and their building.
And Bing.
Bing!
15 seconds.
Every time that guy said Bing, I could not help but laugh, dude. It was so funny. I kept being like, Bing, and it's done. I kept saying little snide remarks.
So there was a little bit of anti-Microsoft going on.
There was a little bit going on.
But it's only because Ben had consumed copious amounts of wine.
Just
because
I hit that level. Hit the wine level.
He was on the line. On the line of becoming
definitely
Jenga.
On the line.
So what if we all try to change our search engine to Bing for a week and see how we do? Can we do that? Bing challenge?
Interesting.
The Bing challenge?
Definitely try it and then let us know about it.
Yeah, Sam, how about you try it and let us know about it?
Guinea pig it for you guys.
I'm not going to fucking try it. Some bullshit.
No,
it's that bad? The engine is that bad you wouldn't even try it?
I'm just prejudiced.
It just seems like
I'd have to change my, you know, I'd have to go into each and every one of my browsers. I guess I only really use Chrome, even though I have them all installed. So I change it in Chrome from the search field. Yeah, I'll do it with you. I'll do it with you.
Okay. It's being challenged.
So like it's Monday, so this week or yeah, Monday, Friday?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it.
Cool.
It's going to be awful.
It's on. I don't think it'll be that bad. They put so much money into advertising, I kind of have to assume that they actually made a halfway decent product.
Yeah. If you want to buy something, I'm sure it's great.
Yeah.
You know, when you're looking to buy products and web services and stuff like that?
Shopping results.
What if you're looking just to search for some code examples or something like that?
I don't know. It's supposed to... What's the other tagline? Not Bing, it's done, but the something engine...
The decision engine.
Decision engine. There you go.
So that, where should we podcast tonight?
That advertising slogan has to mean something.
Should we podcast tonight? I'm sure the answer is something like... Not the Microsoft.
Well,
you know, Microsoft really churns through their advertising partners. You remember in 07 when they released Vista and they had the WoW starts now? Yeah, that was their slogan. And there was this company, I forget what it is, but you look it up. And anyway, they obviously got fired after that.
Well,
they had a different one for Windows 7.
This is a whole can of worms.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. Don't get me started, Sam.
Sam is a Vista believer. Lover. He's faithful. And I was one of those, well, I'm comfortable enough with XP, I don't necessarily see a need to upgrade types.
Me too. I held on to XP as long as I could, and when Windows 7 came out...
Yeah, I was...
Didn't Sherry have some issue where you installed her machine and she would never want to wipe it? There was that one machine in your house, I remember that, right? Well, was that an XP?
It still has the same install from 2002.
From the original?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. when Sam tried to wipe it, what did you say?
No.
She still won't let me format it.
It's mine.
Okay, well, here's the deal with that computer. The WMI got corrupted, the Windows Management Instrumentation. Right. And so the whole thing's gotten really unstable. And so at the time, I had an IE7 Beta 3 installed on it. And because the WMI got corrupted, it was like blue screening all the time, and it was a mess. And so I thought, well, I'll just stick in the XP disk, and then I'll do a restore.
Restore install, right.
Or is it repair.
Repair,
sorry, not a restore.
Right.
Repair. And so what that does is it basically reinstalls XP, but
just
keeps
the
all
Windows
your programs.
Part.
Yeah,
all the programs stay the same,
but
et cetera.
It installs IE6 over IE7
beta
now.
Three.
So it's a mess. You have both browsers installed. The WMI is still a mess. The whole OS is just completely unstable and rickety, and it's like, oh, my God, freaking out.
You could have a future in Windows diagnostics. I know that sounds horrible, but so many people resist that sort of thing that there's got to be a high-paying job out there for you somewhere.
Quite possibly. So what I ended up doing is I was trying to manually remove IE7, the instances of IE7, so that I could get it off, because that was really the main problem, is that every time you do anything in Windows... It couldn't, you know, because Internet Explorer is integrated at the core.
To everything.
Level.
People, apps use it all the time, right?
Yeah, and it was just, it would freak out no matter what you did, basically. And so I ended up using a really great program that I was surprised by called System Mechanic by Iolo. And they have this very low-level tool for removing software. And so I could actually tell it to get rid of IE7. It would basically do a loop of some sort and cold
a loop of some sort
and find every single DLL, every single everything.
And it didn't break anything else?
No, it really found like a massive list. I mean, it was really long.
Yeah.
No elbows on the table, man. Every time you do it, you're making a noise.
You're right.
I'm impressed. That's obviously a reoccurring problem with Windows is they'll ship a product with X amount of software installed, and what you find useful and what you do and do not want to keep is up to you, but if you were to go and try to remove some of that software, it's obviously not easy.
Registry kind of fucks you in the ass, Sam.
So you
saw that machine, huh, Cherry?
Mm-hmm.
It still works fine for you?
Mm-hmm. After 9 years.
After 9 years on the same install? Oh, my
That's
God.
That's got to be
what
some kind of record. We should look into that.
That has got to be some kind of record.
Well, there's this piece of software called Style XP by TGT Soft that lets you make your XP installation look really super cute.
Is that like wind blinds?
Yeah, except it integrates a lot better.
And that's why she's keeping that same.
Because
it looks
cute.
So check it out. Windows XP Service Pack 3 actually broke the functionality of Style XP. And since the software is old, they never bothered to update it.
Yep.
And it may or may not be pirated to some extent.
Yep.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
We don't know what the status is of that piece of software.
It's actually still running Service Pack 2, and Cherry refuses to upgrade it to Service Pack 3.
So you're on SP2. And what kind of cuteness? Define the cuteness of this machine.
Yeah, tell us about it.
It's just pink. Everything's pink.
Are there like any and little Hello Kitty icons?
No,
I
don't do Hello Kitties.
Well, what do you do that's pink?
You know, cute stuff.
Are there any like little animals at all?
Animals, yeah, maybe one or two animals.
Okay. Little like rabbits or bunny rabbits or something else like that?
Yeah, might be a rabbit or panda.
Can neither confirm nor deny the existence of a rabbit.
Well, there you go. Straight from the user. Cuteness wins.
Yep.
Enough to have all the security exploits post-service bag too. It's worth it.
It's worth the cuteness.
There is actually underlying truth there. People will go with what they know. And sometimes, you know, it's for better or for worse.
Yep.
I will. Like Sam Vista. There you go.
Sam and Vista. Knows what he knows.
Even though Windows 7 is a far superior operating system.
Far superior.
Oh, that's funny. Good times. So, do we know what event is next? Coming up next here in the future?
There was this hackathon this weekend, right?
Silicon Valley Code Camp.
Listeners. So I can't make it to that. I can only go on Sunday, but I'll see you guys there.
Yes. Most of the Port 4 podcast will be there most of the time. And if any of you guys are remotely in the Bay Area, you should come say what's up to us out there.
What's up?
And it's not so much a hackathon as it is just like a learning camp. They have...
Wait, there's no prizes?
No.
Now
Ben's not even coming. But they actually have quite an impressive list of topics up on their website. And, you know, everything from high-performance HTML or something thereof, all the way down to nitty-gritty stuff I don't even know about yet. So if you're remotely interested, check out the website.
Nice.
Or just Google Silicon Valley Code Camp, because nice. I don't know what the web address is, and then hit us up.
Great. So I don't think we throw out the date. Today is October 3rd, 2011. This is Port 4 Podcast number 16. Thanks for listening, guys. See you later.
Have a good one.
See you next time.
Bye.